Big news, the Optimal Blue Summit Agenda is live. And this February, we're bringing mortgage innovation to Scottsdale. Join us February 23rd to 25th at Talking Stick Resort and Conference Center for 3 days of insights, networking, and tech showcases. Explore tracks like Activate AI and Automation, Grow Your Profitability, Ensure End-to-End Results, and Tech Showcases and Training, all designed to deliver ROI. Hear from Olympic legend Michael Phelps, NBA President Bob Brokesmith, Chief Economist Michael Frattantoni, Housing Wire's Sarah Wheeler, and leaders from Optimal Blue. Check out the full agenda and register now at summitoptimalblue.com. Use code HOLIDAY for discounted pricing. See you in Scottsdale.
What happens if these tariffs are somehow reversed?
It's definitely a huge question, right? You would think, hey, the importers are the one who've been paying the tariffs. But if they've been raising their prices to counteract that, then they're pushing on to the wholesalers. The wholesalers have been raising their price. They've been pushing on to the retailers. The retailers have been pushing their price. They've been pushing on to you and me.
Welcome to Optimal Insights, your weekly source for real-time rate data and expert capital markets commentary, brought to you by Optimal Blue. Let's dive in and help you maximize your profitability this week.
Welcome to Optimal Insights. I'm your host, Jim Glennon, Senior Vice President of Hedging and Trading Client Services at Optimal Blue. Our clients and industry partners have long relied on Optimal Blue for trusted insights and commentary, and these podcasts are an evolution of our commitment to keeping the industry informed. Let's dive into today's episode. Welcome, everybody. It is December 8th. It's Monday, counting down the days to Christmas, to the end of the year. Kind of hard to believe we're almost in 2026. But obviously, the podcast goes on, and there's a lot going on in markets now with the government reopened and a lot going on that could affect our industry and in interest rates. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. We'll do a market update with James and Alex. And then, of course, we've got the market advantage this time around. So as you may recall, the market advantage report comes out around mid-month. And that podcast, the Market Advantage podcast, has now been combined with Optimal Insights. So once a month, we'll have Brennan and Mike come on to talk about the highlights of the Market Advantage report and give you a little bit of a preview of the report before it comes out. So we'll talk to them in a minute. First, a little bit of data, the OBMMI for conventional 30 years at 6.2. So still, you know, relatively low compared to the last few years, but stubbornly above that 6% mark. The 10 years at 4.2, so almost exactly 2 points lower. Again, still suffering a little bit from the Fed funds rate being high, but also just from the amount of debt pouring out into markets right now and sort of the lack of good demand for that. So we're still looking for that 6% mark for mortgage rates to really see volume pick up. But we've seen really good volume in this fourth quarter regardless, just good purchase volume. And we're actually seeing quite a few refis and cash out loans come through. So check out that data in the Market Advantage report. And a lot going on finally with the Fed meeting coming up here and some unemployment numbers next week. So we'll talk to James and Alex about that right now. Okay, let's get right into it, gentlemen. Even though we haven't had a ton of economic releases come out recently, there is a lot to talk about going into the end of the year. I don't know where to start. So we'll start with numbers. We did get some numbers last week. We have not had an official Bureau of Labor Statistics unemployment report yet this month. We will get that next week, but we did get the private payrolls from ADP, and that was finally a negative number, which I can't remember the last time we saw a reduction in payrolls. So really starting to see some weakness there, and it's kind of feeding into this narrative that's out in the media that the tariffs are starting to hit businesses, especially small businesses, right? So the ADP focuses on private payrolls, but also a lot of small businesses use ADP for their payrolls. So they're seeing that. And that's kind of what they've pointed out too, right? They've said, we're really seeing the deep cuts in businesses of less than what, 150 people?
Yeah, 50 individuals. Yeah, we saw the distinction. ADP demarcates a small business at 50 employees. And those businesses that reported with 50 or more employees saw a net gain of 90,000 jobs. And those with 50 or less, your typical small businesses, they saw a decrease of about 120,000. And so that's how we landed at that negative number of about 30,000 contraction in private payrolls.
Mm-hmm. That's a huge number, especially you consider all these businesses are 50 people or less. You have a six-figure drawdown in those jobs. That means that, you know, easy math there would be tens of thousands of businesses have lost workers, and yeah, you've got tariffs. You've got also the healthcare issue that's still kind of lurking in the background of the government shutdown conversation, right? It tends to be those smaller businesses that use things like affordable healthcare, public healthcare. So yeah, really starting to see that happen. And I mean, it could also just be that we're due. That's been some of the thought too, is that we're due for a slowdown in the economy. And that's going to be highlighted like by a drawdown in employment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that seems to be the direction from the whispers that we get in the data so far. I'm looking forward to next week. On Tuesday, we'll get that first non-farm number, the delayed November number. So looking forward to that one.
Right. And we also got some good news on the front of inflation, right? We saw CPI come in at 2.7 last week, which is continuing to drop despite the talk about what tariffs are going to do to prices. It does seem like the consumer is holding back on spending, and that may actually be bringing prices lower where folks just aren't willing to spend the money anymore. They're actually being careful about what they're paying for.
Kevin Foley has long kind of hit this question of, yeah, everyone expects tariffs to be inflationary, but if people stop spending, then you're going to actually see the inflation come down, right? And if jobs and wages are weakening, that would line up well with the story. But inflation tends to be the harder problem to fix. So it's not bad to see this number creeping its way down. That may help us, right? If it keeps going down, keep encouraging our rate cut. That helps get jobs flowing again. That moves in the right direction. It would be, nobody wants to see the pain, but it's not bad that number is coming down one way or the other.
Yeah, unemployment ticking up a little bit, inflation ticking down. It probably means just a more efficient economy, right? Money was really flowing there for a while, regardless of, white collar, blue collar. There was just a lot of money flowing into the system, and we've had the brakes on. The Fed has had the brakes on since, 2022. And it does feel like that's having an effect. The tariffs are having an effect. General slowdown in the economy is happening. So we are seeing numbers start to go in a good direction in terms of what it could mean for interest rates ultimately here, probably early 2026.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like you said, Jim, it's been the post-COVID era has been nothing if not historically abnormal. And this kind of feels like a return to the typical economic business cycles that we've come to expect. And as you said, we've been in good economic times the past 5 years or so, all things considered. And in addition to that, it's been an incredibly loose credit environment for big and small. We've seen it very easy to lend with banks, but it's also been a period of profound change in consumer credit markets as well, with mm-hmm. Buy now, pay later schemes and such.
Right. Yeah. I mean, folks are pulling back on some of the things that would make common sense to you, like things like, what do they call it? Casual dining. That's kind of the first place to take a hit. Places like Chipotle, right, are starting to get beat up a little bit. So that's, telling us that the working class is definitely drawing down a little bit. Folks are just paying attention closer to what they're spending their money on. So this week, more employment info. So we're kind of stacking it up here. We got the JOLTS report, which is the job openings. What are we expecting there?
I'm not quite sure on what we're expecting there. I think it's probably a continuation of the trend that we saw with private payrolls last week. As we've been talking about, we're kind of in a blank spot for the past 2-3 months here. So I would expect probably something in line with the ADP payrolls that we just discussed that were released last week. What I am expecting from this is it to probably have more profound or outsized impact than we would typically expect of the JOLTS report, simply because we've been going without the non-farm payrolls. So look for a flat or potentially slightly negative reading on that one.
Right. Otherwise, we've got the Fed meeting coming up here on Wednesday. Obviously, will be closely watched for a decision, but the decision is likely a quarter point cut, but also the language to kind of give us some kind of clue what the rate path could be looking like in 2026. It's been so back and forth. If you listen to the Fed heads discuss this in the media, you would think that they could almost be split by the first quarter of 2026.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think all signs point to us getting a quarter point cut this Wednesday. The big thing is, like you said, going to be the Powell's comments after the fact. I think he's kind of entering his lame duck period as he'll be out in March. But what I'm going to keep my eye on is the dissenting opinions. I think we can guarantee that there will be some dissent, you know, regardless of what the decision ends up being. And so it'll be interesting to see. I would expect Myron to maybe, let's call it 50-50 chance of him dissenting and saying that he wants an even more aggressive cut. And then we've also seen dissent to the other side of those concerned about inflation. See if maybe that CPI number last week tamed any of those concerns. But I know first and foremost, you know, Kansas City Fed president dissented on the last rate cut on inflation concerns.
Between Wednesday and the next cut or pause in January, we do have one Fed governor's term, Kugler, is going to come to an end. So we will have a new face next time we're in for it.
Right. And as we talked about last week and the week before, there's going to be a ton of turnover in the Fed coming in 2026. And it seems a foregone conclusion that the Fed will be continuously stacked with business-friendly people, right? Business-friendly voters. So we will end up with a Fed that's a little bit more controlled by the White House going into next year. And that should mean lower short-term rates.
Yes. Yeah. I think Q1 will be the most transformative, as James pointed out. Kugler's term's ending in January. Atlanta Fed President Bostic is out in February. He's retiring at the end of the month. And then we'll see Powell's tenure end in March. So much come the next 3-4 months here.
Yeah. Doesn't necessarily translate to lower mortgage rates. We all need to continue, you know, remember that, but it will mean, you know, a looser credit environment, hopefully a little bit of a reprieve on the business side, just allowing banks to make different types of decisions with how they use their money and be able to borrow cheaper. So potentially that brings down mortgage rates in the long run by way of either the spread between treasuries and mortgages or just the overall demand. When we have a curve that actually looks healthier than it does right now, or no matter, you know, what instruments you're buying, you can get kind of the same rate of return. All right. So moving on, tariffs. We touched on tariffs a little bit earlier as it related to inflation, but we also have this looming. The Supreme Court is going to be coming back to us here. We don't know exactly when, but likely before the end of the year, with a decision on whether tariffs are even legal as they've been implemented by the White House. So there's been some discussion around that and some discussion around what happens if the court comes back and says, yes, they are illegal. There's already been, I believe Costco filed a lawsuit already saying that if that turns out to be the case, they want their money back. Basically, the money that they've paid in billions worth of tariffs, they want that money back. What's the recent scuttlebutt on what happens if these tariffs are somehow reversed?
It's definitely a huge question, right? Because you would think, hey, the importers are the one who've been paying the tariffs. But if they've been raising their prices to counteract that, then they're pushing on to the wholesalers. If the wholesalers have been raising their price, they've been pushing on to the retailers. If the retailers have been pushing their price, they've been pushing on to you and me, right? So who might want to get their money back? Well, I might want my money back. Yeah. But you know, you push that all the way up and everyone could argue that they should get repaid. I think there is a crazy world where the importers do get repaid even though they've raised prices. And so they actually make money on this, right? So that would be kind of a crazy outcome of this. It's going to be very complicated to undo. The administration has already signaled, hey, if the Supreme Court rules against us, we have other ways that we can do this. I think the Supreme Court technically could rule, yeah, you can't, you know, have the tariffs this way anymore, but they wouldn't make anyone pay it back.
Retro.
That's definitely, that feels like a very administratively friendly decision. And I might put my money on that one. It just kind of makes sense rather than trying to figure out how to undo this whole thing. But
sure. So that puts the administration in the mode of figuring out how to maintain those tariffs going forward. And they've already come out almost as if they're expecting the court to rule against tariffs, that they have got other ideas on how to implement them. And I believe, Alex, earlier you were talking about, I believe it was Section 232, which is a way to say that these tariffs are a matter of national security and that's why they need to be maintained.
Right. So the majority of the tariffs are currently in effect are blanket tariffs placed on any import from a particular country. If you remember back in April, Trump and his big whiteboard, as he revealed one by one, the rates that'll be charged to specific countries. There's an additional way that they can levy tariffs, and that's via the Section 232 tariffs, which essentially, you know, you can call a product needing to be produced in the United States under national security grounds. And what I think they would probably do is they would just say, well, every product is a national security, this is done being done on national security grounds, and they'll just do it all under this Section 232 tariffs. From what I've read, those would be much harder to overturn because, again, it's quote unquote on national security grounds.
Right. Which is super subjective. I mean, you know, especially depending on where the burden of proof lies. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. It does feel like, as you said, James, the way to go that wouldn't make a nightmare for the unravel would be to court rules against tariffs. So tariffs stop temporarily. White House finds new grounds to impose tariffs, keeps tariffs going. And the saga continues probably throughout this administration. And then, you know, we see where we're at during midterm elections next year, how those are working in terms of stimulating the economy or dragging the economy down, or kind of maybe it's a nothing burger and we're just making good tax revenue off of some of these deals.
I mean, what a mess it would be if in the process of giving the tariff refunds, the government was spending money, right? Like that would just totally shoot it right in the foot. It would be painful. But it is, again, Costco is suing ahead of time. The ruling is not out yet, but they're saying, hey, we think that we should get this money back. I'm sure they'll present their balance sheets and say, this is, you know, prices that we raised or didn't. This is how much we've spent, and try and make that argument. So it's very possible that if the court rules, no, you have to give this back, that there will be probably years of legal debate to get it out.
Woof. All right. So more on that. We'll keep watching. Look for that court decision here pretty soon. I would hope before the end of the year. I mean, nothing really on the horizon that should push rates one way or the other. Again, with, you know, if we get a cut from the Fed, which we probably will on Wednesday, don't expect that to have an immediate effect on rates. That's all built in at this point, those expectations. But do listen to the rhetoric or whatever the discussion is in the actual statement, but also in the subsequent press conference, just to see if there's any nuggets there, such as, you know, when Powell said far from it at the end of the last meeting. That was a big deal that he said that, and that you could see a retraction of that. You could see something similar on Wednesday in the press conference. Anyway, keep an eye on that. But it's going to take, I think, more probably bad news in the labor sector, good news in the inflation sector to really have a meaningful effect on mortgage rates.
Yeah, Jim, just to place a little bit of emphasis on that, I went back and looked at 10-year and 30-year treasury rates, which, as we know, are how we build the mortgage rates right now in our industry. And we're actually higher than we were in both the 10 and 30-year than we were in September when this rate cut cycle began. So we have yet to see those changes in short-term rates transform into meaningful declines in the long-term rates.
Right. Frustratingly so. All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Great discussion as always. As promised, we are going to switch over and meet with Brennan and Mike. I'm going to talk about the market advantage report. So as you may recall, a couple of weeks ago, we let everybody know that we are merging our two podcasts. So the Optimal Insights podcast and the Market Advantage podcast have become one. So basically what that means is once a month, we will have the Market Advantage segment, which will come up here in a second. And what that's going to be is a preview of the Market Advantage data report. So we pull a ton of meaningful data out of all of our systems. And every month we break that down into what we feel is the most meaningful and most interesting. And that report comes out sometime mid-month. So this podcast will then be a preview of that. So you'll get a preview of what December's report is going to look like here in a couple minutes. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, Brennan. Pretty interesting month of data behind us here in November. Want to take us through some of the origination trends we observed?
Absolutely. Let's see. Total lock volume for November, down 25%. That's the headline. I don't think that's the right story. The story is that we're still up 17% year over year. And this was comfortably the strongest November since 2021. So this right term refi production that we've seen over the last few months continued. slowed a little bit from the blistering pace of September and October, but remained well above 2024. 223% on a year-over-year basis for rate and term, and 29% for cash outs increase over the same month in 24. Purchase market, maybe not as optimistic there, proving somewhat resistant to the much more attractive current rate environment that we are in. I think the purchase market, limited supply, affordability is still an issue. Homeowner lock-in effect remains a barrier. And so purchase lock volumes are actually down 22% in October, which is, you know, it's anticipated seasonally to see some decline, but we were also down 6% year over year, despite us being in an otherwise, you know, pretty strong market from a production standpoint. So that production market's finicky, definitely finicky. Thank goodness we have the strong performance on the refi side. Rates, what did we do in November? They were actually mostly steady, at least for the 30-year conforming index, the benchmark that's the underlying for the CME contract that we mention every month here. Just dropped one basis point to close the month at 6.14%, but was 53 basis points better than the same time last year. FHA rates dropped another 5 bips to get below 6, so 5 handle on FHA rates to close the month at 5.99. VA rates, about 5.75, they rose 9 bips, and jumbo rates rose 8 bips to 6.44%. Interestingly, the 10-year treasury, now getting very close to that 3 handle, finished the month on the nose at 4% and was down 11 bips from the same time or from the end of October. So what we saw is some widening of the spread between the 10-year and the mortgage rate, with the mortgage rate basically staying flat and the 10-year picking up 10 bips. So would have liked to see that flow through to our borrowers, but was not the case. So maybe a good story for us to tighten up here as we look towards the end of the year. A couple odds and ends in terms of production. FHA and non-conforming production picked up share at the expense of conforming and VA lending. I think that sort of follows what we saw on the rate side in terms of where we saw improvements across products. PUD development, the share of planned unit development as a percentage of our total rate lock volume picked up a little bit. It's a really good proxy for us for new construction. So it picked up, but it's still well behind where it was at the same time last year. I think at that point, we were seeing roughly 1 in 3 of the loans coming in as PUDs in our lock data set. And we're nowhere near that now, just down, I think, more like 20 to 25%. So again, sort of a slowing in that new construction space. I do think the new home construction would be a welcomed improvement in terms of affordability and supply in the market. If we continue to see new builds, that would certainly help with more options for homeowners or potential homeowners. And lastly, the non-QM march continues. Non-QM share hit 9% for the first time since we've been tracking it in the rate lock volume in November. That's the highest we have ever seen. So just continue to see strong demand for these non-agency, more esoteric products or sort of new products to the market that aren't conforming with the agency guidelines. So we'll see if that trend continues. I think, as we've talked about on previous shows, we certainly think it will.
Awesome. I'll jump in and round us off with some secondary data. So best effort mandatory spread, a huge proxy of the industry for, you know, looking at the profitability of hedging and executing in the secondary market. Saw those numbers almost flat month over month. The 30-year conforming best effort mandatory spread was down 2 basis points from 33 to 31 basis points, while the 15-year was up 3 basis points, the 32 basis points compared to 29 last month. And government loans were up about 4 basis points on average, backing up at 15 basis points. Now, one of the ways that we calculate that metric, right, we at the point of loan sale, we look at the best effort price on a loan compared to where it's actually sold in the market. And what we do to make sure that we take out a defensible number is we actually back out the cover. So the difference between the rank one and the rank two spread. And we do that to make sure that, hey, if someone has a screaming hot bid or there's a misbid, or if somebody is selling to a buyer who wants to pass through a CRA pay up, that's not muddying the waters there. So when you look at these numbers, you should always think that there's probably a little bit extra on top of that if you're making that decision from going from best effort to mandatory. And we also exclude spec loans and different types of niche products as well, where you can see a much larger spread. Another trend that we're observing is where folks are actually executing these loans in the secondary market. And so this month we saw a pretty large change in the amount of loans sold to the cash window, jump from 22% to 25%. And, you know, if you back up, you know, maybe about a year ago, it was about a third between cash, bulk, and MBS securitizations. We've seen MBS securitizations rise the last 6 months in a row. It actually dropped a percentage and a half this month, but it ended this month at 45% of the originations that we saw went through an MBS securitization. Now, I think a lot of that has to do with maybe some market share wins by some of the larger players out there and some banks as well. The folks who have the kind of the operational expertise in place to create those MBS securitizations. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of shakes out going in December. We also saw this month the amount of loans sold to the rank one price during a loan sale drop 2%. This hit a high water mark for us since we started tracking at 81% last month and dropped to 79% this month. I think what you might be seeing there is lenders are starting to look at their end of year kind of like deliveries sent to investors. And lenders have certain covenants or representative mix that they're trying to hit with their investors. And typically investors will review this on like a quarterly or annual basis. And you might be seeing some activity there from lenders where they're like, hey, I've sent too much of a certain type of geo or loan production type to an individual investor. And, you know, I might, you know, not take the best price if it's, you know, a basis point or two basis points higher. And I'm trying to manage that overall data set or that relationship with an investor there. We also saw MSRs drop this month. That makes sense, right? Given the fact that rates dropped in, you know, on average this month, but it was just a small decrease. We saw a 3 basis point drop on MSRs of loans sold this month, about 1.09 as the value, about down 3 basis points from 1.12 the previous month. This is still about 4.5 multiple on new servicing, which is a very healthy price for servicing, even though there was that decrease in rates. And lastly, our investor count has held steady again at the fourth month in a row for 11 investors that are being shown an individual loan on a loan sale. Now, it'll be interesting to see. Last December, we saw a drop of about down to below 10. I think it was 9 investors. And that'll be interesting to see if we see that same trend as we get close to year end. And you might see investors that just have hit their capacity for buying loans. And so that's a trend I'm watching out for next month as well. Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you next month.
All right. That is it for today. Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. James, Alex, Brennan, Mike, thanks so much for the insights. And that's it. Join us next week for another episode of Optimal Insights, where we'll continue to provide you with the latest market analysis and insights to help you stay ahead. Check out our full videos on YouTube. You can also find each episode on all major podcast platforms. Thanks again for tuning into Optimal Insights.
Speed matters in lending, and borrowers expect instant answers. But traditional loan locking ties you to a desk, slowing decisions and creating friction. That's why Optimal Blue introduced mobile locking in our mobile app. Now, loan officers can lock loans anytime, anywhere, fast, secure, and accurate. Access your live pipeline, update loan details, run pricing, and complete locks right from your phone. No delays, no desk dependency. Just instant action that enhances the borrower experience. Unlike browser-based tools, mobile locking is built into our native iOS and Android app for faster load times, stronger security, and a seamless experience. And the best part? It's included at no extra cost for all Optimal Blue PPE users. Download the Optimal Blue mobile app today and start locking loans on the go. Access, price, lock, it's that simple.